Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
Home Abstract and Title Company was founded in 1867 and is the oldest company still operating in McLennan County. Home Abstract is comprised of a team of honest, friendly, hardworking professionals dedicated to providing both commercial and residential real estate clients with the highest level of communication and service. Their team is committed to working hard and building and maintaining strong relationships, because transactions are so much more than just deals. They are clients, deserving of the courtesy, care, and respect that Home Abstract and Title Company is known for. Visit Home Abstract and Title Company at homeabstract.com. Cross the Brazos and White Oak, ride hard, that'll make it by dawn. Cross the Brazos and White Oak, I'm safe when I reach San Antonio. Welcome back to the Waco History Podcast. We are deep into the Crossroads series, this special series of episodes that Rick Tullis is doing as my compadre on this journey through Waco's past and looking at it as crossroads. Welcome back, Rick.
Thanks. Glad to be here. I think I feel like I got an upgrade there. I'm compadre now. So I'll take it. Well, I'm excited. Waco's got such a deep history of educational institutions, higher ed institutions, even to the point of being labeled from, you know, somebody's marketing brain, the Athens of Texas at one point. So I don't know. What do you think about that? Being you are in academia, does Waco feel like Athens?
Yeah, no. Having been to Athens, been on the Acropolis, maybe Lover's Leap has a little bit of that feel, but it's hard to find here. But yeah, I you know, by the late 19th century, it's deemed that, along with a couple of other.
Yeah, we're not the only ones.
Texas
and there's
cities.
Actually a real Athens, Texas of all, you know, there's every name in the world and towns in Texas, and there is a Athens.
Yeah, I would say that Athens, Texas has the biggest claim as the Athens of Texas. But I think it's reflective of just the vibrant educational scene in Waco early on and continuing. This will be a two-part episode, so we'll get into some latter institutions in the second. But we want to start at the earliest period here, Rick. So where do we start if we want to start with education in Waco?
You know, you think about, I mean, it's a frontier town, really, in the 1850s. You know, Waco, McLennan County, kind of on the edge of the frontier. But even then, in the earliest stages, they were already thinking about higher education. It was already something that was happening. I mean, most of us know that the story of Baylor, founded in 1845, and it's known as the longest continuous institution, but it wasn't founded in Waco. It was founded in Independence, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to a little bit more on that in a minute and how and why it ended up in Waco. But it is interesting to say, or to think about, the Republic of Texas was interested in starting these institutions of higher learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so contextualize this for us. If we talk about Waco as the area is founded in 1849, the city and county organized the next year, contextualize that for us with regard to education. What's going on in the state during that period?
Yeah, so between the founding of Texas as a republic to before it joined the Union, the legislature granted or put out grants for 8 universities, 7 colleges, 10 academies, and 4 institutes. Now, I don't know what the difference is and how they categorize those four in different ways. And in fact, Baylor wasn't the oldest one to receive a grant and to be founded, but it's the only one that survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The oldest surviving university.
Continuously operating, I think, is what they
say. Yeah, there's some people down in Georgetown who try to make that claim, but
Yeah, they stopped operating somewhere in there. So
yeah, and then after Texas became part of the Union up to the Civil War, they granted charters for another 117 institutions. So I don't know. I just think it's a little interesting. I mean, people are in survival mode. I mean, they're founding communities. They're just starting from scratch in a lot of these areas, and bringing civilization to parts of Texas that hadn't been settled. So it is interesting to me that they're making it a priority. So I can really appreciate that. And if you look at the ones that are started, the biggest driver tends to be the religious community.
Mm-hmm.
The very denominationally driven.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the world was more tribal back then when it came to your religious denomination. In fact, if you of those that were started, let me give you the stats real quick. So broken down by denomination, the Methodists were the most prolific group in founding colleges. They inaugurated 21 by the end of the 19th century. The Baptists were next with 10 by the end of that same time period. And then right behind them, the Presbyterians had 8, the Catholics 4, Church of Christ 3, Episcopalians and Lutherans with 2 each, and the Congregationalists with 1.
Wow, where was the Congregationalist college?
I have no idea. But who's counting?
Not in Waco, we know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny you should mention that. I think that those stats are really interesting. And when De Cordova and Erath kind of laid out Waco, they reserved one block for educational institutions. And so it was a city block bounded by 2nd, 3rd, Webster, and Jackson. And it is there, keeping with those stats you just mentioned, that the Methodists found the first college in 1856, which is Waco Female College.
Yes. Yes. In fact, there's a great map that our sponsor.
Our named sponsor.
Yeah, Home Abstract, there at their main location off Woodway, the access road there in Woodway. Right off their lobby, they've got this map from 1869 that they found in their archives, and I was looking at that the other day, and it actually has that a block of land laid out that says university. They were setting that aside purposely for the addition of these higher ed education institutions. So Waco Female College. It has a pretty good run from 1856 to 1893. It was a consolidation of an original. The 1856 part was the Waco Female Seminary, and then it in 1857 was combined with the Waco Female Academy. I don't know the difference between a seminary and academy. Do you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess one's more of a religious.
Yeah, plan. One's focused on religious education.
Yep.
So in that early period, so from what I saw, by the time you get to the Civil War, there are basically two higher education. There's Waco Female College is operating, Waco University is operating, and those both remain open during the war. And so those kind of survived the war when a lot of other schools were shutting down.
Right. Now that the Waco University, I think it originally called Waco Classical School, then Waco University, it had an early on Baylor connection. So what was that?
Is this the Burleson connection? Yeah. Burleson's on the scene for a long time.
Yeah. He had a falling out of some sort in Independence, moved, him and his staff came up to Waco to, run Waco University. I will say there is a little bit of a connection to one of my previous episodes I did on how Waco got cool.
That's a great episode, by the way. Listener, if you have not heard that episode, drop this podcast and go back and listen to how Waco got cool.
You can wait till after the podcast. You'll be all right. But in that, I talk about one of the driving reasons for creating air conditioning was trying to solve the problem of yellow fever and malaria. That people were having, they didn't understand the true cause, but they just realized that if they, you know, could control their environment more, or live far enough north away from the swampy lands, they didn't get those sicknesses. And I think that was one of the driving factors. Independence is down there in the swampy lands, and people tended to get sick, but they, in fact, in one of the handbooks, it specifically talked about they wanted to get out of the long moss and yellow fever region.
Yeah. The Waco University, which of course later is going to merge into Baylor University when it comes from Independence, was kind of a active school, was a very active school. What are some stats on it?
Yeah. So, one of the handbooks I read in 1876, they were matriculating more students than any other institution west of the Mississippi, is their claim. So,
that's quite a claim, yeah.
And it also claims in 1866 they became one of the first co-ed institutions in the South. And
that does seem early. That does seem really early. 1881, control of Waco University is transferred to the Baptist General Association. So
that's an interesting part. Mm-hmm. It actually wasn't started. What was the name of it? The Trinity Baptist Association. It was actually a organization a little further north of here that started the college in Waco.
That's right. But it has a conversion at some point and becomes Baptist.
Yeah. And then I think that's where the leaders of the Baptist Convention said, hey, there's, you know, we don't need two of these universities. Let's consolidate them. And I think at that point, Waco as a vibrant community, crossroads town with a rail tap and a bridge and a much better transportation network, and not having the yellow fever part of it, probably drove a lot of that decision to consolidate into Waco.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept the Baylor name.
So I have, I found a list in 1878 in the Waco Examiner that talks about who's operating in town as far as schools go. And so there's Waco Female College operating, there's Waco University operating, and that's still kind of it as far as colleges go at that point in time. So even though it's going to be called the Athens of Texas, it's about to pick up speed here, but it gets a slow start in the early years.
Right. I think the next one to be added to the list was Paul Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it didn't actually start in Waco. It eventually moved to Waco. But similar to what we said a minute ago, it was founded by a religious institution, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and it was founded in Austin in 1872.
I think in 81, is it late 70s? I think it's, I had 1881 is when it makes its move to Waco initially. And most folks don't know, it was at Marion 8th, originally were the location for Paul Quinn College before they move out to what was the former Garrison Plantation. So if the street that borders Paul Quinn campus now is Garrison, and that is named for the Garrison Plantation. There were 31 acres up there that became the home of Paul Quinn when it moved up to an area that, and you may remember this from our East Waco episode, that was called the Hill. And there was the Hill and then the Bottom. So the Hill in East Waco became the home of Paul Quinn College.
So where'd the name Paul Quinn come from?
Yeah, so Paul Quinn is named in honor of Bishop William Paul Quinn, who was a leader in the AME church.
Mm-hmm.
At their initial location, this is freedmen now freedmen that are going to school, newly freed slaves, men and women. They're taught blacksmithing, carpentry, tanning, saddlery, and other such skills. I said 31 acres, it's actually 21 acres of the old Garrison Plantation. Is where it moves.
Great. Yep. It was one of the, it was the first black African-American college in Texas. Now, it didn't stay in Waco. And it went through its ups and downs.
It's going to have a long history in Waco before it leaves, however, over 100-year history.
Yeah. It's amazing. And went through some tragedies. I think one thing, getting back to my Chamber of Commerce roots, in the 50s, the chapel had burned down in mm-hmm. the girls' dorm. And the chamber and the business community raised $100,000 to rebuild. So it's great to see the community coming together to make sure they supported the college. And then I believe it was in the late 80s, 1980s, or early 1990s.
It leaves in the early 1990s. And and then around the turn of the century, this latest turn of the century, Rappaport Academy begins to move in and kind of take a building at a time, rehabbing it and opening it up. But Paul Quinn moves to the grounds of the old Bishop College in Dallas. And so Paul Quinn is still operating, but no longer in Waco.
Right. Yeah, but you love the fact that it's still being used for educational purposes, which is an interesting fact. Is that you dig in the history, there are other institutions that are called academies and colleges. You know, one that pops up is St. Basil's College, mm-hmm. was at the turn of the early 1900s, was a boys' school here in Waco. But when you really look at the details of it, it was a preparatory school. You know, these weren't higher, it wasn't a higher educational, you know, they weren't giving out bachelor's degrees or anything like that. They were getting kids ready to go to college. So I find it interesting. It's probably somewhere along the way, the term college and universities, it probably evolved to mean different things. And as things started to get accredited and whatnot, I don't know. You might have some more information on that since that's your world.
Yeah. One thing that I want to mention on Paul Quinn. So currently there's an effort to try to rehab William Decker Johnson Hall.
Right.
Which is kind of that last building that hasn't been touched. And William Decker Johnson Hall was influential to Jimmy Carter. In fact, this kind of came out mm-hmm. recently where he mentioned the influence of William Decker Johnson on him. And so it's a, you know, it's got kind of some natural, it's a really interesting building because it's a very solid building that needs about $10 million worth of work now. But a really important building on that location. And hopefully there's plans now. Actually, they've even talked about Paul Quinn maybe offering, when that building gets redone, offering classes in that building which would be Paul Quinn coming back home.
Yeah. It's funny how costs have escalated. You could build a whole new dorm and chapel for $100K in the 50s, but now you need millions to rehab a building.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of things, you know, what's in a name, there was a Hills Business College
mm-hmm.
that opened in 1881 at 4th and Franklin. And you look at these business schools or these early things that were called business colleges or business schools, and, you know, it was more of a, seems like more of a training ground for people working in industry in the back office, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bookkeeping, accounting, other basic skills you would need to be able to run a business. I don't think it would be necessarily considered a classical education at the time.
Yeah. But, you know, as businesses are professionalizing in the late 19th century, they need people with qualifications to kind of manage these places. And so, yeah, you see several of these business colleges pop up.
Yeah.
And a few in Waco.
Yeah, quite a few, actually. And so Hills Business College, by 1893, it had 430 students, which is pretty significant for the time. It made it to 1900 before it closed.
Just to compare that, so when Baylor University comes to Waco in 1887 and merges with Waco University, it has 337 students.
Yeah.
So that does give you, Hill Business College, not too long after that, has about 100 more students than
right.
Baylor University.
Right. Yeah. And let's keep on with the business college theme real quick before coming back to one of the traditional universities. So Toby's Business College, not too long, in 1893, is started up.
I think this came up in the Sports Crossroads episode.
They had a sports team.
Yeah, they had a football team. Yeah. Baylor's first football game, I think, was against Toby's Business College.
You don't want to get taken down by Toby's Business College. That would not be good. That would keep you out of the tournament for sure.
Yeah, it was started. So Toby is a guy, Edward Toby, began teaching at night in his home in 1890. And he resigned his bookkeeping position at Provident National Bank in 1893 to teach full-time during the day. And by 1899, he's chartered his own college.
Yeah.
Toby's Business College.
Yep. And just kind of started, kind of entrepreneurially. He was doing it out of his house and at night, and that eventually rolled into a full-time gig.
Well, if you want to talk about rivals to Baylor during the 1890s, there's another one you got to bring up.
Well, there's one more business school I want to bring up.
You want to go through all the business schools?
Well, I mean, we're kind of on that roll. So Central City Commercial College, also known as 4C Business School.
Uh-huh.
It pops up in 1924, and one of its calling cards was, or they put it at a location at Washington and 8th Street, and apparently it was a successful location because every streetcar in the city passes within one block of its doors. So
it was a breakaway from Toby's, group.
Yeah.
Some folks that were employed at Toby's broke away and started their own thing. And 4C lasts a long time. 4C runs on up to the end of the century, I think, up to the end of the 20th century.
Yeah, yeah. It changes hands a few times and closes in 1994. I will point out, just because it's the nature of this podcast, it was at a crossroads within the crossroads.
I like that. Very meta. Yeah.
Okay, so now let's go to the...
Yeah, tell me about this big rival that comes to town.
This rivalry that gets started. Adran College. So it's a condensed name from two brothers, Addison and Randolph Clark. And they'd already been on... By the time they got to Waco, they'd already been on a journey to some degree, open up their college. They actually... The first evolution was up in Fort Worth. They started the male and female seminary of Fort Worth. But, location, when you think about real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this great piece of land they had ended up being, as Fort Worth, and this was in 1869, so Chisholm Trail gets going, all these cattle drivers are going through Fort Worth, and I think Fort Worth kind of goes through a period of debauchery is what I read.
Yeah.
It's how it's described.
Well, and, I feel like it's still in that era. Yeah.
And so it's not great to have your male-female seminary right in the midst of the vice district of your city. So they swung. They're like, man, we got to get out of here. So they swung hard, and they actually took their college out to Thorpe Springs.
Yeah, sounds like Gomorrah to me.
In Hood County in 1873. So they went, they were like, we're going to get away from everything. I think they realized that maybe they were a little too far out there, and as transportation networks started to develop, especially railroads, they were enticed to come to Waco, because Waco Female College, there was a period of depression, economic depression in there in the 1890s.
Yeah, so 1893 to 95, there's a panic followed by an economic depression.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently it took out the Waco Female College that mm-hmm. we had discussed earlier. And so the vacant buildings available and a much more desirable transportation hub and a lot more opportunities for their students. So they came here in 1895.
So the faculty and students of Adran College arrived by train in Waco on Christmas Eve, 1895.
Wow.
And so it begins operation soon after that. 1902, it becomes Texas Christian University, and we see that in the catalog starting in 1903.
Right. And so they had a good 15-year run, and what brought about its exit, or the beginnings of the exit, And there's some old pictures out there of their buildings and their campus. They had a beautiful, main administration building. Well, it burns. It burns in 1910. And
You can see those pictures on the Waco History app. There's also some pictures of the fire. We have some pictures of the campus in flames.
Yeah. There they were. Lost their main building. The community leaders in Fort Worth saw an opportunity.
So insurance didn't cover the loss. So losses were about $100,000. I think insurance was like $29,000 or something like that. The university made appeals all over the state to help rebuild. And the best offer
came from Fort Worth for $200,000 and 50 acres of land. They landed DCU.
That's a pretty good deal.
That is. It's the gift that keeps on giving. In fact, as we're discussing this, it makes me think about the comments we made a second ago about Paul Quinn. Mm-hmm. And when that burned down, that would still have been in the memory of the local folks here in Waco. And, that probably was a good motivation. And it's not the only time someone has tried to pull one of these institutions away from Waco.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In fact, my institution, Baylor University, was tempted in the late 1920s as Baylor was entering into some financial difficulties in the late 1920s. Dallas was the leading candidate to lure Baylor away from Waco to Dallas. Dallas, which, as you pointed out before we began recording, didn't have a major university at the time, outside, I guess, Southern Methodist University. It didn't have a major university at the time, so there was a hope to kind of lure Baylor to Dallas. And actually, the city of Waco stepped up. One of the things that Baylor needed was a performance space. And so Baylor got together, or the leading citizens of Baylor got together, organized a fundraising campaign.
Of Waco.
Organized a fundraising campaign and raised the money to build
Waco Hall.
So Waco Hall, which is built in the early 1930s, and as of last weekend, it is still Baylor's main performance hall.
Right, and that's why you see, that building gets used a lot in a community-wide effort. I think the Waco Symphony Orchestra and other organizations are users of that space. And so I think that that sealed the deal, that kept them here, and it was a great investment. So
yeah, it paid off.
Yeah. We haven't really said this, but kind of the post-World War II area, which we're getting close to as we've discussed some of these, that'll be covered in our part two episode. Mm-hmm. Where we'll talk about a couple of the institutions that are very prominent here in TSTC and MCC.
But there are some tangents.
There are some tangents here I think are worth mentioning. Some of the trivia of life. But
what's one that bears mentioning?
So Richard Koch, who we described in mm-hmm. the Crossroads Political podcast, that he was a governor of Texas from Waco early on in the in our statehood. And while he was in office, that's when both UT and Texas A&M were founded. Now, these are both known as land-grant colleges. And I found it interesting. There was a federal, I think the Morrell Act that, mm-hmm. that establishes the land-grant colleges, nationally, mm-hmm. To the states. And in Texas, we don't have many federal lands, right? I mean, that's how the federal government was providing the capital to start these colleges, was by dispersing some of their federal lands. So in lieu of that, they gave the state of Texas scrip, so to speak, in other federal lands out west, that then the the state was able to sell those that script to generate the money to found those colleges. And if I want to say they sold those lands for like 8 cents an acre.
Mm.
Man, heck of a bargain.
It was a good deal.
Like 730,000 acres out west. So anyway, so Koch was part of doing that. And then another famous governor from Waco, Sol Ross, after his time. So by the time he was governor, things were a little shaky at Texas A&M. Some of us might say they're still a little shaky, but, you know, that might be my perspective. Anyway, he comes in, he finishes his time as a governor and becomes president of the Texas Agricultural and Mechanics College.
Mm-hmm.
And was really kind of credited for turning the university around and putting it on the path that it is today.
That's right. There's a statue of him, I think, at Texas A&M University. But we also have Sol Ross State. Named after him.
Another significant university in Texas. Okay, here's one that most people might not realize. So there was and this is connected to Sol Ross too.
Mm-hmm.
So William Prather, he was a local businessman, lawyer, actually. I think he'd served district attorney and some other roles in the community, but he gets appointed onto the board of UT by Sol Ross in 1887. By 1899, he was the chairman of the board. And then I don't know how this happens, but in a move, he becomes president of the university in 1900 and stays there until his death in 1905. So local Wacoan that was the president of UT. He's credited with coining the term, "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You." Now, he mm-hmm. didn't write the song. That was something the students did later on. But, he was the creator of that saying.
He coined the phrase.
Yeah. Yes.
John Tarleton is really an interesting character. And actually, we probably need to do an episode sometime on John Tarleton. But he's a big landowner in Texas. He's born around, we don't know, 1808, 1811. We have different dates for that. But he wanders kind of the West at a young age. And he's a store clerk in Tennessee, where he's in Knoxville, Tennessee. He's a school teacher for a while, gets a job being a store clerk, works about 40 years saving his money, and then he buys a large plot of land in Texas, out in Erath County in Texas. And then he comes to Texas to kind of see his land. He finds people living on his land. And so he actually ends up in Waco in 1860 or 1861.
It's probably safe to say hostile people.
Yeah, hostile people on his land, yeah.
Yes.
He sets up a mercantile store in Waco. And eventually, later in life, he falls in love.
Yeah, actually marries the widow of one of your favorite people.
The best name in the history of people named in Texas. So this is it. Talifas Telemachus Louis Augustus Abactus Johnson. So
yes, otherwise known by his friends as TJ.
Yeah, yeah, or Tell. You hear some of him called Tell at times. But John Tarleton marries his widow named Mary.
Mary Louise Johnson.
Mary yeah. Louise Johnson. And Mary Louise Johnson, we'll say the local connection for her, Mary Street. So just over, running parallel to Franklin, is Mary Street, and it's named after her.
Do you have any streets named after your wife? Or you?
I do not. I have that's aspirational, but no.
Okay. All right. Well, if you really loved her, I mean, I'm just saying, you'd make that happen.
Yeah. But John Tarleton, of course, leaves quite a legacy. And what's that, Rick?
Well, so he does eventually leave. His marriage only lasts a year with Mary. he ends up, he was successful in Waco, you know, ran one of the biggest mercantile shops. I think he was also involved with one of the local hotels. And, but eventually, as the frontier moves, his land becomes less hostile. He ends up moving out to Palo Pinto County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Erath and Palo Pinto, yeah.
Yep, ends up moving out there. And then in his will, he bequeaths a large amount of his estate.
$85,000, which is a lot at the time.
Yeah. To the founding of a college in Stephenville.
Tarleton State University. Eventually it becomes Tarleton State.
Yeah. So another interesting tangent, another crossroads through Waco.
Yeah, and so there's a statue there on the campus of Tarleton as well, honoring John Tarleton's bequeath to create that institution.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we can pick this up in part two.
Yeah, so that brings us up really to around World War II as we kind of talk about the development of educational institutions. And I think we've arranged, we're going to have some special guests with us next time to help bring this story up to date.
Some people that know a little bit more than we do.
Yeah, exactly.
It might be a little more interesting.
So be sure and tune in for the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Waco History Podcast. Like what you heard? Subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes so we can reach more listeners. You can find show notes and info on every episode at wacohistorypodcast.com and more info on Waco's past at wacohistory.org. Our theme music, used with permission, is Cross the Brazos at Waco, performed by the late Billy Walker. For more info on Billy's music, go to billywalker.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.